This is a Colorado kid, Mike Rapata. I'm live with Wolfie D.
Hey, this is Jimmy Street, host of the Live and in Color with Wolfie D podcast. Hear the life and times of professional wrestler Wolfie D. From his time in the territories with PG-13 to his time in WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA, and more. Nothing is off limits and nothing will be held back. Thanks again for tuning in. Here he is, Wolfie D.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome. Man, I got to figure out a better open, man. Welcome, welcome, welcome. What the fuck is that, man?
I mean, it's just comfortable for you, I guess, brother.
I guess. I don't know.
It is kind of your thing, you know.
So. It starts to become, I was thinking about that, man. It's like, why do I say that? I don't know what else to say. I got to think of something cool, maybe. I don't know. But, man, because usually, you know, we're just chilling around the house and I'm walking around doing stuff or talking to you, whatever, and that's what I'm up with. Is welcome, welcome, welcome. But today, man, we got a very special guest, and I always say that too. But this one, man, he don't do podcasts. He don't do hardly anything. I didn't know where he was. I hoped he was still alive. I hadn't heard anything about him, and I reached out to a few people to get his phone number because you and I had talked about it. And it took us a couple of days, and we made contact with Mike Rapata, the Colorado kid.
Man, that's cool, dude. Man, Mike's a cool guy. I don't know him that well. I got to, you know, I got to work shows with him for when I worked some for Burt. You know, he was always the guy there. But, you know, I mean, dude, I'm looking at his resume. He's a former NWA champion. He's a former USWA champion.
Yeah,
you know.
It was good, man. Yeah. But, you know, I'm going to tell y'all a funny story, man.
Just, please.
I don't know if you, just like me, my mind goes 1,000 different directions sometimes during the day. So I go outside yesterday and, I go to check the mail. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, I go out there and come back in, and the trash can's out there from that morning. You know, we put it out yesterday morning for the trash to come, and they'd already come. So I grab my trash can and my mail, and I roll it back up to, you know, front of my next to my garage there.
Yeah.
And my neighbors, you know, we're cool with my neighbors, and they weren't home, and it just felt nice outside. I don't, you know, I hadn't been, it had rained for like a week straight, it seemed like. So anyway, it was just like, you know, I'll be a nice guy. I go over here and get my neighbor's trash can. I get my neighbor's trash can. I'm walking. I'm probably looking at my phone or thinking or something. Next thing I know, I'm opening my front door about to pull their trash can into my living room. And I stopped and I'm like, what the heck? I missed the past, you know, 20 yards of walking somewhere. And man, I felt so stupid, man. I'm glad nobody was watching. You ever do that? Zone out like I think it might have been about 4:20 our time, but I'm not sure, you know?
Dude, all the time. Like, I'll accidentally remember that I took TV remote to my truck to go get food. Like, I'll bring in the mail and leave it on the porch. Or, I mean, all the time, bro. I don't know if I'm just like, I think, you know, you and I are very similar because we're both born in the same time frame. And I don't know if it's a Sagittarius thing where we're thinking about a million other things. I mean, I don't really do the you know, astrology stuff, but somebody out there that knows about that stuff, let us know if it's just we're being idiots or if it's something.
But, you know, I've been doing a lot of some people have seen on my Facebook and stuff, this, I've been into this wood burning, and I got some ideas out the yin yang. I got wood out the yin yang, and folks, check my stuff out, because I'm going to have it all for sale. So,
please,
and this is all hand-drawn stuff. I'm not using a machine. It's a machine. It's like a tattoo gun, what a wood burning gun kind of looks like. And I'm doing it all by hand, and I'm going to make some clocks. I've got some other ideas that are going to be super cool, some wrestling related. I just started a Kiss set of drink coasters that looks pretty cool. You seen that, Jimmy?
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
Y'all hit me up. I can do a lot of stuff, man, and I enjoy sitting at home creating stuff, man. Especially if people want to buy it, it makes it even better.
It does, but it's beautiful work, man. It really does. It looks great. I've seen some of the preliminary stuff, and yeah. you're on. I mean, you know you're artistic. Everybody knows that. But when it comes down to it, you know, man, you it's a really cool idea what you're working with right now. So I'm excited to see. Maybe we'll see some Live and in Color with Wolfie D podcast coasters sometime or something, or you know, cool. Your grandpa on one or whatever.
I'll order it. I'll make it.
Yeah. What do you need? So, yeah. But yeah, man, I'm excited to see what you can do with this. The ideas that you have, I'll just say this. If you, and I believe that you can pull it off. That's no question. But if you pull them off, it's going to be amazing. And I'm just saying, wrestling fans, rock and roll fans, be prepared. Go cash your check and get some money.
Fans, I've got some football ideas too.
So. So
whoever you like.
Whoever you like, right? Just not the Texans or anybody. Exactly. For anybody. So.
Well, all right, brother. Let's get the Colorado Kid on here.
Now, do we have to call Colorado, or is he's
actually? I wondered that myself, but once I got the number, it's funny. It's the area code is not where he's at now. He's in Illinois. He told me. That area code is not Illinois. He's probably on the. He's a fugitive. We'll ask him.
After these messages.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
Hey folks, to get your official Live and in Color with Wolfie D merchandise, go to prowrestlingtees.com/livewolfied. Check it out.
If you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D on Apple Podcast and like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. And while you're at it, write a review. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. It's very important to us and always appreciated. Thanks again.
All right, guys, we're back and we've got our guest on. Jimmy, the reason this one came about, man, I can't believe we didn't think of this of him before now. But it's like Brian Hardison on YouTube. And what is it called? Brian's what, Jimmy?
Brian Turner's VHS Rehab on YouTube. Great channel.
Okay. Yeah, check that out. But anyway, he posted the finish of a match involving myself and Mike Rapata, and he had Jackie Fargo in his corner. And I always remember, I love that because Jackie was there, but I always enjoyed working with Mike as well. And so I'm beating the fire out of this Colorado Kid, man. I don't even know why he let me do half the things I was doing to him. I'm putting him through tables, hitting him with chairs, and that daggum Jackie Fargo gets in and gives me a punch, and Colorado Kid crushes my dreams. But anyway, I hadn't talked to you in forever. Everybody, Colorado Kid, Mike Rapata.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. Oh, I can't believe you let me do some of that stuff to you, man.
Oh, my God. You hit me in the face with a damn hubcap so many times. And I loved every bit of it.
Absolutely. We had some great matches, man. I always enjoyed working with you. It was one of those things, too, where, like, you were kind of Bert's dude, and I was kind of Randy's guy. You know what I mean? And the promoters, like, them themselves create the, you know, so like when me and you would wrestle each other, you know, Bert's wanting, Colorado should win, and Randy might be thinking, oh, no, Wolfie should, you know, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Man, we had some good times, man, even in the dressing room, man. The hacky sack.
Oh, my God. That's what I'm getting to say.
You used to bring a hacky sack, and then me, and you, and Brian Christopher, and who else played? Jamie, who else played?
JC Ice, and oh my God. Well, there were 7 of us that one day that we was playing. We had 7 of us, and we got it around 7 times. And when we completed the 7 hacks, I was like, oh my God, we made it, you know. So we pop, the bag hits the floor, we pop, we're high-fiving and everything. And then Jerry Lawler comes over and starts chewing out Brian Christopher's ass.
And let me say, here's the way I remember him, the very first thing, he's walked through the middle of us with like almost no expression and mumbled kind of like under his breath something about like, if y'all quit playing fucking hacky sack, we might be drawing and going over your match or some shit like that, man. And, all of us got quiet. And then I guess I got on Brian individually, but then you told me something the other day when I first talked to you about you went to Lawler afterwards. Tell that part of it.
Yeah, So I go to Jerry Lawler and I told Jerry, I said, that was my hacky sack, my bad, I didn't mean to, bring it. Didn't think that he was going to chew my ass out. And boy, he scalded me just like he fucking scalded Brian. So I went, running with my tail between my legs back to Brian. And I was like, I told your dad, what I'd done, it was my hacky sack. And he looked at me and he gave me a stupid look. And he goes, why would you do that? And I was like, I don't know. I just, I'm just a dumbass.
I could see the look that he gave you too. Why would you do that? That's so funny, man. But dude, that's how we didn't have cell phones and tablets and shit, and the locker room is a boring fucking place.
Oh my God.
You go crazy. And once you got your matches,
once you got your matches all talked out, and we had time to kill, and that's the way we killed
I mean, you could be doing way worse stuff. I mean, come on, seriously.
Hey, the people listening, man, because I played a lot of hacky sack in I guess middle school, early high school, and so I was pretty decent. You obviously it was your hacky sack. You knew how to hacky sack. Brian's pretty good, and you know what I mean. I remember a bunch of times when straight up. It would go over our head and we'd fucking sweet chin music that motherfucker back over into the fucking field of play.
I had a unique kick. I would just, and I wasn't even looking at the hacky sack and I just throw my foot behind me and I'd feel it hit the bottom of my foot and that thing had come right back over back into play. And I was like, damn, that was so sweet every time it happened. A lot of times it didn't,
Yeah.
Brings back memories. But moral of the story is Lawler don't like you playing hacky sack.
Hell no.
King is not a hacky sack fan.
Not at all.
That's hilarious, man. So, hey, tell everybody, man, what you've been up to, man. I ain't seen you, heard from you, heard your name forever. It's like you just disappeared, man. What happened?
Well, I came back to Nashville, and then that's whenever I was working back with Bert, and I was doing the Joker character, in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter told me whenever she was in the freshman in high school, she says, Dad, can we go to whenever I graduate? Can you you want to go back to California? Because I'd been living out there, for like 8 years before. And I said, hell, I've That's still got all my old friends.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I used to hacky sack in Colorado.
Continue with the story.
So I was hacky sacking in a college. That goes on. Yeah. So anyway, my daughter wants to go to California. So she's walking across. She's at the Nashville School of Arts. It's a special school that you've got to audition to get in.
Yeah.
And I thought, she'd get in with her drawings and stuff because she, she draws like Jerry the King Lawler does.
Wow.
And but then she starts singing, and I was like. All I hear was some screaming up in the bathroom whenever I was like, wait, are you all right up there? And she goes, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just singing. I was like, oh my God, sounds like somebody's killing a cat. So that's all I heard, So then she's walking across the stage and she gets her diploma, and then she sings after the fact, and she's like Pat Benatar swinging her head, doing a crazy song, you know, it's just, you know, a young people song.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I've got to make arrangements. I got to move to California. So I went out there for about 2 years, and then I come back here, got married, and then been married to her mother, actually. We've been going together on and off for, it's now 25, almost 25 years. And I married her the last, 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, 2018.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations. So, that's good, man.
So yeah, she put up with me, and so, you know, I figure, you know, loyalty, you know, she's, I can't run her off.
Let her go over, right?
Yeah. Let's rewind just a minute, man, and just talk about what brought you into the wrestling business. What made you want to do it? And, you know, the generic question of what made you want to do it, and then how did you find the end?
Well, I was watching Macho Man and Lanny Poffo, and they was working against each other. You know, of course, I didn't know that they were brothers. You know? So he was the first wrestling hero that I knew, and so years later, you know, and then I got married to the first ex-wife, and then you know, I've only had two wives. So she's the ex-wife.
Yeah.
So anyway, while I was married to her, I would watch wrestling all the time. Matter of fact, our honeymoon, we go to Nashville, and I turned
on. How old were you?
21.
21, okay.
Yeah, when I was 21, and we go to Nashville on our honeymoon. So we got married to my first wife. Her name's Angie, and so we go to Hallmark on Trinity Lane. So it's, you know, kind of run down piece of, you know, crap motel, you know. So we stay there, and then as soon as we, you know, unload all the shit out of the Jeep, I turn on the TV, and the wrestling's on. And so she drags a chair over there, and she's getting reaching up, you know, going to change the channel. And I was like, oh, hell no. So I snatch her up in a power slam, and I bury her on a fucking bed, or, you know. As I slam her down on the bed, I tell her, I said, look, when that TV's on wrestling, that's my TV.
Yeah,
I said, it's your TV any other time. I said, but if it's got wrestling on there, that's my TV.
That's awesome.
Now, well, I got to stop you real quick. Now, at 21 is when you first really just started liking wrestling, or you liked it before that, but this was a moment?
Oh, I liked it whenever I was 12.
Yeah,
and then my uncle, he came in, and, you know, I used to watch it with my uncle, and then he came in one day, and he goes, oh, that stuff's fake. And I was like, oh, now I wanted to know how it, you know, why is it calling it fake?
Randy Savage and Lanny Poffo, you'd say, kind of were your inspirations?
Yes.
That's okay. Awesome.
Matter of fact, one of the last matches that he reffed for me. So he was... He come into, I was doing the Joker at the time, and Lanny said, don't you think, and he was talking to Pete, and you know who Pete is. So anyway, he's talking to Pete, and so Pete, you know, tells me, he says, Lanny wants to know why you're doing the Joker character. You think you get more run out of the world champion? And I was like, well, you know, it's, you know, I'm just having fun now. And so he explained it to Lanny, you know, he's just having, you know, it's a relief for him.
Yeah.
So, so then he comes in, and I'm wrestling Kevin Zion, and I've wrestled him many times before.
He knew
all my tricks, you know, so I was trying to apply these tricks to him, you know, and he wasn't putting me over at all. So I rolled out of the ring, and I tell Pete, you know, I was like, Lucky, and I tell Lucky, I said, go over there and put your knee up and grab the top rope, and that's all you should have to do.
Yeah.
So he goes over there, and Lanny and Kevin are staying with me, you know, and they're, you know, telling me, you know, get in the ring, get in. And so Pete gets over there, and he gives me this question look. He says, you know, and he shrugs his shoulder, and I just raise, you know, push my hand up, and I tell him, get up, you know, with a hand motion. And Lanny and Kevin turned around, and they see he was coming in the ring, and I slid under the rope so slick, and I punched the snot out of Kevin's eye on back of his head just as hard as I could. I went to put in the boots to him. And I was like, well, you ain't going to get away from me now, you little shit.
That's awesome.
So by the time we got done, I controlled the whole match. And then so Lanny comes back in the dressing room, and he goes in, and he waits until I get all my pain off. Everybody leaves the dressing room, and he comes over and he says, Mike, he said, I've never seen anybody, you know, control the whole match, you know. And he says, you know, I just appreciate you. And whenever you need a referee, you know, you go ahead and you can call me anytime.
That's cool, man. That's
and
cool.
I was like, you know, coming from you, you know, that was just, you know, yeah. Bring, you know. And he goes, I didn't mean it to bring it to you like that. He says, I know you know how good you are. You know, you know how good you are. He said, I want you to know I know how good you are, too.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that's
so
nice.
That was pretty cool. And then I wrestled Anthony Ingram, you know, Nimrod.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here at Terrier Mills. And so Lanny's reffing that match too. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm the baby face. Mm-hmm. And I come, and of course, it's my home crowd, you know, so they pop for me, you know, and they're, you know, Anthony's giving them a bunch of, you know, crap. And
yeah.
And so I get in the ring, and he goes, and Lanny tells me, he says, well, this isn't like a normal wrestling match. You know, this, you know, you got your people here, you know, behind you, you know. He said, I said, and I told him, I says, well, I'll have them sleeping before, you know, we get done. And so he started laughing, you know, so as soon as it started, Anthony goes, I bet that fat old lady there is your friend. And I was like, yes, he's my friend, and she's my friend, and she's my friend. And he slapped me across my face just as hard as he could. And I mean, it's the sound just ignited. And before his fingers come off of my chin, I done had him pop back. And I mean, we went to work, you know, just, you know, beating it up. And so Lanny jumps back, and I mean, just, you know, freaking out, you know, and he give us all kinds of room. And we was on the floor, we was in the ring, we was all over the place.
Yeah.
And so the finish is he's going to suplex me through the table. So I grab him under his arm, and I pick him up, and he's got the table out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I leave with him, and he goes, we ain't going to make it.
We ain't going to make it.
Because he said it out there, and I had the legs, you know, and I broke
the ring to the floor. Is that what you're saying?
No. It was in the middle of the ring, on the other side of the ring. Off of the second.
I got you.
Off of the second top.
We ain't gonna make it.
Off of the top. It was off of the top row.
Yeah.
So we come crashing down through the table, and Lanny counts. Of course, Anthony's shoulders aren't down, you know, but he counts, you know, and he, you know, so I win. Mm-hmm. And we get back in the dressing room, and Lanny walks right by me, and he's deep in thought. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, maybe that table was just a little bit over the edge. Mm-hmm. And then I got to thinking, I was like, no, Macho Man, you know, used to, you know, use a table pile drive, you know.
Who was Memphis. It? Lawler.
Yeah, Lawler. Through a table. So I was like, you know, I think we're good. So he sits over there, and he's rewinding in his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back over, and I'm finished changed. And he comes back over, and he goes, Mike, I'm going to tell you. He said, this was great. This was great. This was great. And he says, when you finished him up with, you know, through the table, he said, dude, that was awesome too. He says, anytime you want me to ref for you, he says, I'm just telling you, I'm available.
Wow. That's awesome.
Okay, so, you know, that's
cool.
So, you know, to make my hero, you know, you know, one of my biggest fans, you know, by the time I was all done, and you know, it was around the world. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Can't yeah. take that away. But let's rewind a minute, man. Go back to, okay, so you let's get to how you got into business and, you know, how did it get going? How'd you do
okay,
that?
Okay, now I'm out in Nashville. I was building the South Central Bell Building.
Okay, yeah.
The Batman building. Mm. Yeah, I got on the first floor, and, you know, that was a trick. So I moved to Nashville. And I called my buddy Wild Bill Dickerson up, and he's a bus driver. He used to drive bus for Reba McEntire.
Okay.
And you know, he finally ended up, you know, driving the bus for Reba McEntire. I knew him a long time before he ever drove the bus for Reba McEntire, but he drove a bus for everybody in the world. So whenever I moved to Nashville. I was like, I just need a place to stay for one night. And he says, you know, Mike, you can stay in my house, and, you know, anytime you want. You. Mm-hmm. I said, just need one night. You know, I've got enough money, you know, to get me through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just, you know, so I spent there one night, and then I got up the next morning, and he goes, Mike needs a job. What are we going to get him a job? And so everybody, you know, and their band members, you know, they're guitar players, you know, with the bands around town and stuff. And one of them said, at the warehouse, they've got jobs at the warehouse. And the other guy says, Kroger's, you know, their Kroger's is hiring. And Bill looks at him and he goes, no, he ain't working at no damn warehouse and no Kroger's. He says, look at him. He says, he wants a man job. And Bill tells me, he says, you go downtown. And you walk around there, there's a big, huge pit in the middle of Nashville. He says, you just walk around there and you ask for John. And I said, well, who's John? He says, I don't know who no damn John is. He says, but there's going to be a John there, and he's going to give you a damn job. If you just walk around a couple of times, you know. So I get down there, and I walk around, you know, a few times, and I'm trying to get a hard hat to go down in the pit.
Yeah,
and my buddy, well, my boss, you know, before he was my boss, he his name is Dewey. He comes over and he says, "What do you want to go down to the pit for?" And I says, "Well, John's getting ready to give me a job down there." And he grabbed me by the arm and he drove me over to his truck. He says, "You fill out this paperwork, son. You don't want to go down in that pit. We're going up this." We're building this thing up. I was like, oh, hell yeah, that's what I'm all about, you know. So he hired me, and as soon as he hired me, then I was a little bashful. You know, I would never stand up for myself and everything. You know,
you can't be bashful in Nashville.
So I let everybody run me over and stuff. And then I seen, you know, I'm probably about 2 years, been working there for a long time. And then a buddy of mine threw his glasses across the floor because my boss made him mad. Mm-hmm. And so I thought he'd quit. And I was like, damn, Bird, why did you make him quit? And you know, it's a hard enough, you know, time to get people to, you know, get up on this building.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, go find him. Don't make, you know, don't let him quit. So I go down there and I found him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling him, I was like, you ain't quitting, are you? He says, no. He says, I was like, well, I seen you throw that stuff down, you know, and got all mad and stuff, and I thought you was going to quit. He says, no, but you've seen what I've done. And he says, what you need to do is start doing the same thing. You need to start throwing shit down. And so I started, you know. So the first time I'd done it, I was, you know, Ragu was chewing. I had three bosses on the Batman building.
Uh-huh.
And I did work for everybody else, but, you know, I had three bosses. But I would slam that stuff down, and the Ragu was chewing me out. And I turned around and I said, look here, old man. And he's an old biker dude, you know. And I chew his ass out back, you know. And so then I started becoming the bully. So I was bullying these guys. And then so then they go, well, wait, Lightning, he's a lot younger than you, and he's just as big as you are. And as soon as Lightning gets here, you know, he's going to take over this building.
Okay.
So I come to work one day, and I tell him, I says, I can't wait to meet the man, you know. I hope, you know, he's... you know, good and smart anyway. So whenever I come to work that morning, there's nobody on the ground to ride the elevator up with me. So I get on the elevator, and the elevator guy, you know, he's, you know, shuts the doors, and he kind of chuckles, and he takes me up to the, you know, to the 15th floor, and I open the door, and there he is. It's Lightning. And I walked off the elevator, and I said, I guess you're Lightning, you know, and they're standing behind him, you know, just like, you know, they got his back, you know.
This sounds like a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So I told him, I said, come on over here, and we got this wire spool right here, you know, we'll arm wrestle, you know, see who's the bad man on the block, you know.
Over the top.
So I beat him right arm, mm-hmm. and I turned around, and I beat him left arm, and this is what I told him. I said, now you can sit over there with all them sissies, and not meaning sissies, but, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And I'll treat you just like I treat them. Mm-hmm. I said, or if you step around this table and you stand here right beside me, we own this building. Mm-hmm. And he got up and he walked around that spool and he stood there right beside me. And I said, and I felt all of the air go out of these guys.
Yeah.
Oh, now there's two of him. So me and him was a team, you know, and we would run, you know, run around. We pick up heavy stuff, you know, and we'd carry all that shit everywhere.
Right.
But
So then does that translate into how you got into wrestling?
No, well, that's how I stayed in shape. You know, I did go to the gym, but I was always doing concrete work, you know, ever since I was young, always, you know, looking forward to that opportunity.
Yeah.
And now it was close enough. And then I met my buddy, Marty Gilbert. He's a stagehand sound director. And
Is that in Nashville, the stagehand 40 local 46?
The stagehand local. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was part of the local.
I worked for them a few times.
Yeah. So I was part of the local, and Marty was a sound engineer at the Opry House, the Grand Ole Opry, whatever.
Yeah.
And he got me in a gig over at Nashville, and he says, you can't get paid, or, you know, you won't be paid for it. And he says, but if you drag some cords around, I can get you in the back door. Mm-hmm. So we get over there, and I'm following him around. And as Jeff Jarrett walks by me, mm-hmm. Marty stopped in front of me and turned around. He says, I thought you wanted to be a wrestler. And mm-hmm. I said, I do. And he says, well, don't you think that that's the man to talk to? And I was like, I never thought about that, but yeah, you know. So I talked to Jeff, and he said, be down there Sunday, $20, and get you 3 hours of wrestling training.
Mm-hmm.
So I.
What year is that?
In 93. So I tell Marty, I was like, oh my God, you know, it's Sunday. It's going to be Sunday. Now, I married my ex-wife the 4th of July in 86.
Mm-hmm.
So every 4th of July kind of sucked around, you know, whenever it come around, you know. So now, mm-hmm. I'm, you know, instead of celebrating, you know, I had, you know,
yeah,
you know, it sucked.
So, okay.
So that Sunday was the 4th of July.
Mm.
And I was like, damn, they're not going to be open, you know. They're not really going to be open. So I go down. Marty tells me, he says, well, we'll just go down there and see if they're open, you know, and if they are, then, you know, you can hang out, and I'll, you know, leave you there, and I'll pick you up in 3 hours. Mm. So he drives me down there, and they're open. And I was like, oh my God.
Mm.
So I turned the 4th of July, 1986, all back around. In 1993,
mm-hmm.
the 4th of July is the Colorado Kid's birthday. That's the first time that I stepped foot in the wrestling ring.
Right.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah. So, it, you know, now it's my birthday.
That is super.
The hell with everything else. It's my birthday, boy. So, Jeff Jarrett wasn't there, mm-hmm. but Tony Falk was.
Mm-hmm.
So I bumped a few times for Tony Falk.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony said, where have you done this before? And I was like, no, I've never done this before. You know, this is my first time ever in a wrestling ring. He says, well, you've done it in the backyard or something. He said, and I told him, I said, well, you know, I've always studied, you know, how to fall down and stuff, you know. And taking backdrops into mud puddles and stuff like that, but you know, never in the wrestling ring, you know. We wear a mud puddle out. I mean,
I love that.
There'd be no water left in that mud puddle.
That's perfectly you taking backdrops in mud puddles. I love it.
Oh yeah. So he told me, he said, I'm gonna make a prediction right now. He says, I'm gonna predict you're gonna be the world heavyweight champion, you know. one time in your life. And I was like, well, you know, I just want to be, you know, $50 beat me up, you know, is what I call a jobber, that, you know, guy, you know, that. And he goes, no, you don't have that career for you. He says, you're going straight to the top. So, was it 2-3 years later, then I beat Jerry Lawler. And I'm sitting in the dressing room, and I have.
No wonder your head's so big. Tony Funk crowned you champion first day seeing you. That's
I'm
from Paducah, awesome. Kentucky.
All right, Slack. Go ahead, man. I love you. Go ahead.
So Jerry drops the belt to me, and so Tony walks in the dressing room, and I hadn't seen Tony, you know, since the first day. Well, maybe, I wrestled him on TV the first time. That's when Bert grabbed my foot and Tony beat me. Yeah. And I was like, son of a bitch, you know, so I chased Bert around. Anyway, so, you know, that was the last time pretty much that I'd seen Tony Falk, you know, and it'd been, you know, a couple years.
Yeah.
So I'm in the dressing room, and I've got the world belt sitting there right there beside me. I always polish it up and everything. And so Tony walks in the dressing room, and he looked at me, and he looked down at the belt, and he goes, I want everybody in this dressing room to know that I predicted that, you know, he's going to be the world champion. And I was the first one to predict it, you know. And
I was there. I was everybody the one to that know. Told him to his face he was going to be the champion.
Yeah.
I told him on August 31st, 1902. Yeah. He'd give you the date and everything.
From Paducah, Kentucky. That's a shoot, Pally. That's a shoot, Pally. Yeah.
That's the shoot, Pally.
I got to ask you this. Yeah, we love Tony, too. So before this, now, and I'm sorry, I don't want to keep you off track here, and it kind of makes sense now that you brought it up a little bit, but when did you get named the Colorado Kid?
Actually, on the Bell Building.
Okay.
There's all kinds of mics on the Bell Building, and why did I leave beautiful Colorado Springs to come to Nashville? Oh my God. Because I was, you know, I was in that wrestling world mode, you know, mm-hmm. I was wanting to break into the wrestling business. But boy, I talk so much shit about damn Nashville because, I mean, it's nasty, you know, whenever back in 92, when I started working on the Bell Building, that's whenever it was tore up downtown Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, they were tearing everything up. The streets was tore up. I mean, just messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always talked about Nashville, and everybody's name was Mike.
Yeah.
So they go, we need to come up with a nickname for you. And they said, we're going to call you Colorado. And so, I got me a girlfriend at the time, and she was like 19, mm-hmm. and she would introduce me mm-hmm. as Colorado. So she used to be Girl Friday for Porter Wagner.
Oh, yeah.
So whenever I started working for the stagehand local, mm-hmm. so Marty goes, hey, Andy, which is Conrad's son. I don't know if you guys know all these people, but Conrad is the main guy over the stage local, you know, Opryland.
Okay.
So Andy's his son, and he says, Andy, come here. He says, this is Colorado. He goes, you're Colorado? And I said, well, that's what my friends call me. And I give him this look, and he goes, oh my God, Porter Wagner hates your guts. And I was like, hates my guts? Why does he hate my guts? He says, because he's been trying to get with that girl, and she won't talk nothing about, you know, she just talks about you, just Colorado this and Colorado that. and she won't pay him a never mind, you know. And,
so man, you out-kept Porter Wagner.
And Porter was packing, I've heard. So, you know.
Well, that's what I heard, too. Marty said they bring pitchers in there, you know, and he'd throw it down there on the. He says, I was fishing this weekend. Look what I hooked. And he'd throw it down there, and it'd be a picture of a, you know. Like a music rap.
That's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Let's take a quick time out and get a word from one of my dope-ass sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey folks, this is Wolfie D here, and if you are looking to buy or sell a home in Tennessee or Southern Kentucky, you're going to want to call my buddy, the rock star realtor, Benji Bowie. And you say, Wolfie, how do I get in touch with this rock star? Well, you can call him directly at 615-390-8216. You can go to his website, BowieHomes.com. That's B-U-I-E Homes.com. Or you can email him at BenBowie34@gmail.com. When you need a home, you need the Rockstar Realtor.
Benji is a member of Exit Realty's Garden Gate team in Gallatin, Tennessee. Support for Live and in Color with Wolfie D is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the Ultimate Men's Hygiene Bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code WOLFIE at manscaped.com. If my math's correct, that's about 8 million balls.
When did you meet Bert? Let's talk about Bert for a minute.
Now, I met Bert. I was security guard over at Nashville. Mm-hmm. I got into the wrestling business, and Jeff Jarrett went to WWE, and oh my God, I was growing a beard, and Bert came out there, and he gave me that look, and he's like, you know, why do you grow that beard? And I was like, well, you know, I just, you know, want to be a bad guy, you know, I want to be a heel. And, he goes, no, he says, no, we're looking for baby faces. What you need to do is shave that beard off.
Uh-huh.
So I did. I shaved the beard off, you know, and I left my mustache on. But he was like, you know, and I thought he was talking about we need baby faces, like because I got a baby face.
Right.
I was 29 when I started wrestling.
Yeah.
And Bert pushed me as a 21-year-old for 4 years.
Yeah,
I had 421st birthdays. And he didn't have no qualm about it. Next year is going to be 21st, too.
I don't doubt that one bit. I love it. Me and him kind of had it's like a love hate. Like, I liked Bert. Bert always used me, you know that. But then we also would have we'd have a little argument here and there about what this and that and other. Bert was a fucking hustler, man. And people can say what they want about Bert.
Oh, yeah.
But Bert was a fucking hustler, man, and he did not get out of the wrestling business. And he, I mean, he did enough to fucking support himself.
Yeah.
He still made money. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think his legacy is, Mike? What do you think? Like, if you were to just say, okay, one, you know, no, you don't have to be a couple words, but I'm just saying, what do you think Bert's ultimate legacy is?
Well, he was the promoter after everybody was gone.
He, to me,
he was the last promoter, pretty much.
The last of the guys. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that's a great one. Yeah, because, I mean, I got to work for him, and it's funny. He's given me that look before, too. I'm very Caucasian, Mike. I barely tan in the summer, and I'm wearing a chic gimmick on me. And he says, well, you do all right out there, but we got to get you a better gimmick. That ain't working. And I'm like, okay. And then Dutch Mantel tells me the same thing. And I'm like, maybe I don't have the right gimmick. But I know that look that he gave you. I know that exact look because he's given it.
Oh, my God. He gave me that look many times.
Hey, let me ask you this, because I went through the same thing, man. Like, you know, PG-13 being Randy's guys and USWA and all that stuff. And then on top of that, I rode with Randy everywhere. And, you know, fucking Wolfie, fucking Randy's guy, you ride around with the office, him, Frank, blah, blah, blah. Fucking Randy, Wolfie, you know, just sexual shit, they would say. But all ribs, and it was like Tommy and shit like that. Tommy Ridge, man.
Yeah.
I get ribbed mercifully, and I know you did too on that end of it. But I know that, like, I don't know what Randy is, but it ain't gay. I can tell you that. and we all know Bert's deal, but I mean, talk about having to deal with that. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm gonna tell you. He told me first. He says, you know, they're gonna call you gay. And I was like, I don't give a shit what they call me.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you just don't pick and choose, you know, for me.
Yeah.
You know, I pick and choose you, you know, and if you're a good friend of mine, and, you know, I'm a loyal friend to you, you know. And and he was. I mean, he was, you know, great to me for many years. And, then he did screw me a couple of times. He got over on me.
Yeah, let's clear that up. He got over on you. That's all.
Yeah, he got over it. Yeah. He didn't screw me.
Not in that sense.
I mean, he did, but yeah.
That is the sentence of the show right there.
Yeah. But yeah, man, he did. He helped you out a lot, I know, in your career, getting you the WCW shots and all that kind of stuff. And, he helped a lot of those, you know, that little group of guys right there that, you know, some of them went on to do some bigger stuff. And a lot of guys just wanted to go.
I've got to tell you this story.
Please.
Now, Bert got me in the back of the Catfish House.
Mm-hmm.
We used to wrestle in the pole barn out there by Ed's Catfish Shack, you know, in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Yep. And Rocky Maivia was in the backyard.
Rock.
And he was signed, you know. The WWE couldn't figure out what to do with him. So he was going to quit. And so Bert had me out there talking, you know, to The Rock, you know, about don't quit, you know, just maintain your spot, you know, and they'll figure out, you know, where you're headed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had to talk him, you know, down out of it, you know, so that was me and Bert talking The Rock into, you know, his career nowadays.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Giving him some encouragement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got so many accomplishments. I was just looking at some of them. The USWA Rookie of the Year in 94. You worked
that Lawler. Was that a thing? Was that a thing? I never heard of that before. I think they made that for
you. Yes, it was. It was a thing. It was my thing.
Yeah. There you go. That's all that matters.
They had the label. They had the label me, you know, as something, you know. So they pushed me as a rookie of the year, and I had a Leon Downs, he'd been working for like 3 years, you know, and so they was going for the rookie of the year, and I beat Leon Downs everywhere we went.
There you go.
So did everybody.
But I mean, you're working Lawler and Dundee for the U.S. with the U.S., not for you were holding the USWA title, and then you end up, you know, doing some stints in WCW. You actually end up working Cactus Jack. You work Dean Malenko, Johnny Swinger on WCW TV. Then you end up with the NWA World title, man. And before you was Sabu. He held that before you.
No. I won the belt in the tournament.
Jerry
Sabu
Flint
took it away from me.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. And then I took it back away from Sabu.
That's what it is. Okay.
Then Steve Corino, he took it away from me.
Yeah, and you guys had some battles, man. Those were great matches. I recommend everybody to go watch those matches because y'all worked together like really well. Y'all had great chemistry.
Yeah.
And then you end up going to Japan working for 01 with Steve Corino. I'm getting to a point here, and I appreciate that. Now, how was it working in Japan? Was that was your first time going to Japan?
Oh yeah. I had to make Steve Corino wear one of my jackets so we looked like a tag team.
So
I burnt my damn lungs up. Whenever I run around, I thought it was like fog, but it ended up being smog, and so I toasted my lungs.
Man,
so I couldn't breathe right for the rest of the trip, and so I was having to fight for air. And
did you enjoy? We go over
as Intercontinental
Tag team
champions. Yeah. And we ended up dropping them, you know, while we were there. So this guy, he grabs me around the waist and I told him, because I don't speak Japanese and the guy doesn't speak Japanese either. So we got an interpreter.
Yeah.
So he wants me to go behind him and then he wants me to go behind him. Uh-huh. And then he's going to roll through and get me in an ankle lock, and uh-huh. Then I'm supposed to tap out. So I told him, I says, if I don't know where to go, I said, you grab me first. I'll reverse it. I'll go behind you, right? You know, and then you got me.
Yeah.
And then so that's what ended up happening because I was lost in the match. He went and grabbed me, and then I reversed it and grabbed him, and then he locked me down. I'm face down and screaming in pain, he's just twisting my ankle. I'm tapping and I'm done, you know. So
yeah.
But the next night we get there and me and Steve are working a smaller tag team, and the very last move, the guy jumps off of the top rope, and well, I tag Steve in, and Steve goes, you know, running and over to the corner. And the kid jumps up on the top rope, and he's getting ready, and he jumps off, and he grabs Steve in the around the neck with his legs. He's getting ready to do a hurricanrana, and I've seen it all happening, so I run out of my corner, and I jump up just to meet him, and Steve's power bombing him as I'm driving him down through the mat. And and as we're coming down, and I was like, damn, I really jumped this high, like 8 feet. 8 feet Superman, and you know, and we crashed down to the ground, and on the way down, I was like, I'm going to be too heavy on him. I've got to back off some pressure. Mm-hmm. So I backed off some pressure and popped my left shoulder loose.
Mm-hmm.
And dislocated my left shoulder, and oh my God. So that was the last match of the last day. And I tore everything up, and I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh man.
Damn.
That's when I get back from Japan, then now I've been on an airplane for 14 hours. I get off of the airplane. We get in the car. We drive straight to Nashville Arena, and I get out and start wrestling with Jerry Lawler. And I have got the jet lag like so you crazy.
Shoulder,
I mean, just,
you didn't have to
yeah,
go to
and
the
my shoulders. No, I didn't ever go to the hospital for the shoulder. You know,
so
but
it
did,
in.
You know. Yeah. And gotcha. So I had to wrestle Jerry Lawler that night, and Jerry says, Mike just didn't seem like himself tonight. And so Bert told Jerry, he says, well, he just got off an airplane. He flew back from Japan. He says, don't you think the jet lag is, you know, caught up with you?
Yeah.
He goes, well, I never thought about that. And I was like, hell yeah. I had to go down, lay down. And I was messed up for like a week.
Oh, man. I bet. Yeah. And then did you end up wrestling in China?
Yes. Yes. Actually, I was the very first wrestling match in China.
Wow.
You could look in the books.
Yeah.
The Colorado Kid's very first wrestling match, American wrestling match in China. And I wrestled Justice.
Who was it?
And Jeff Justice.
Jeff Justice. Okay. All right.
And so we go out there. And,
Justice for China or Justice for America?
No, Justice for America. Justice for America. But we go out there and we're good and tight, you know. And I tell him, you know, I was like, hey, you want to go out there? They ain't got a card together, you know. You want to just, you know, open the show? And he goes, yeah, I don't mind, you know. I was like, hey, give that match to me and Justice, you know. So they go, all right, we got the first match down. And then they figured out everything else. But it was like, you know, fresh snow, you know. It's like a fresh piece of, and it's the first, you're the first skater or skier on there, you know. So yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's,
that's crazy. Yeah.
So we went out there and we wrestled, and we were good and tight on each other, you know. And mm-hmm. So whenever we get back from
here's my question real quick. Did the people, since it was the first time seeing it, did they know how to react?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yes, they did. That was me controlling them, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so, I got the ups and downs. So anyway, I get my picture in the paper, in the newspaper, the next morning. And so they go, hey, we made the paper. And then they said, oh, it's somebody just doing a drop kick. And I was like, well, I do a drop kick. Yeah, Let me get that paper.
Yeah.
So Justice is taking a drop kick from me, and his face is out of the picture. So he's, you know, he just got Justice on his leg.
Uh-oh.
So I was like, all right, give all their pictures to me, you know, because it was a perfect picture of me doing a drop kick. And I mean, I'm nailing him in the face, and you can see on the back in the big screen on the back how high I got, you know. So
yeah, it was awesome. I took that shit before. I know.
So anyways, the next night, or so that night, after we get all changed and everything, we come out to the arena and we sitting in the bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what are we waiting on? How come we're not, you know, going back to the apartment or the motel or whatever? And they go, well, we're waiting on that guy to, you know, tear that wrestling ring down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, this is a no-brainer. I was like, everybody, you going to help me help that man tear that wrestling ring down so we can get the hell out of here, you know? And and if you don't, I'll talk so much shit about you whenever I'm down there tearing that damn wrestling ring down. I said, you won't be able to stand it.
Yeah.
So I go down there, and I start helping tear the wrestling ring down. So I grab one of the posts, and I'm running it back. And Wiener, the wrestling, the crew guy, he goes, Mike, put that down. That's 350 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I give him that look like, you know, hey, I know how to carry this shit, you know. So mm-hmm. I set the post down, and I run back, and I grab another one, put it up on my shoulder. And I'm running back, and Wiener's hollering, you know, you're going to blow your damn back out. And I set that post down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on my way back to grab the third one, Andy is, and he's a big monster kid, you know. He's all swollen up and stuff. And so he goes, here, help me. He's telling Justice, help me put this on my shoulder. He says, Mike ain't going to be the only one carrying this pole. So he's on his way. And so I stop and I grab the first, or, you know, the last one, and I pass him and I set it down, and I'm helping him set his down. And he tells me, he says, Mike, how are you so strong? And I said, dude, I've been doing construction my whole life.
Yeah.
I said, if I don't know how to do anything, I know how to pick up and carry heavy stuff.
Yeah.
And so the next night I have to wrestle Andy, and he comes in and he got a sad face. Like somebody had killed his puppy. And I was like, Andy, what are you looking so gloom for? And he goes, well, I get to wrestle you tonight. And I says, well, that's good. And he goes, well, they want me to go over. He says, but I'm going to let you go over because you're a lot stronger and, you know, you. And I was like, no, Andy, don't do that. Do not do that. I was like, you'll cheat us both out of $1,500. I'll be mad.
Yeah.
So, and I said, I'll take care of it. I says, I'll save face. And I was like, you know, so I sat over there for a minute and I thought about it. And I come over and I told him, I says, this is how the match is going to go. I says, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to body slam you. And I'm just making the motions with my arms.
Yeah.
I'm a body slam. So, and I want you to tell me, come on, do it.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I, you know, reach in and I told him first, you know, I says, I'm going to come to the wrestling ring. I'm going to have my robe on. They're going to pop because, you know, the robe. When I pull my jacket off, you know, they're going to pop because, you know, I'm kind of built too, you know, and I said, but when you come out, you're going to grab the next gear, you know, you're going to grab a different elevation. Mm-hmm. So then that's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to body slam you. And then you're going to tell me, you know, come on, do it. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I grab a hold of you, you grab me by my hair and my trunks and you sling me out this side.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and Andy, they're going to laugh at me. I said, but don't worry. I says, I'm going to save face in the end. I says, I'm going to dust myself off and I'm going to come back and I'm going to get in the ring and I'm going to tell them again, I'm going to body slam you.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells me again, come on, give me a body slam. And I told him, I said, this time when I grab a hold of you, you double axe handle me and you throw me out on the opposite side. I want everybody to see everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody's getting left out.
Mm-hmm.
So he throws me out. And I said, and they're going to laugh again. I says, and then I'm going to come up and I'm going to wipe my feet off. And then I'm going to tell you, I'm smarter than you. I'm going to body slam you. And I'm going to come in the ring and you tell me, you come on, get it, come on, get it. And then I'm going to gingerly, you know, like I'm going to, you know, and I'm going to keep my eye on you because, you know, done throwed me out of the ring twice.
Mm-hmm.
And just before I grab you, I'm going to punch you in the head a bunch of times. You run back to the ropes. I'm going to throw you off, give you a drop kick, a headshot. You hit the ropes and then I'm going to body slam you. And when he come off the ropes, I'm back to my feet and I picked him up. And I mean, he was so light. I took him around the world like an airplane spin and I body slammed him in the middle of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I says, I want you to count to three for me. I said, do it out loud right now. He goes, one, two. I said, you count to two. That will be sufficient. I said, you count to two just the way that you just did. I said, and then I want you to sit up just like the Undertaker does. And I said, I'll have my back to you and I'll hear the crowd. Ooh, because I'll have them up to here and they will be screaming. I says, and the bottom will drop out. And as soon as the bottom drops out, I'm going to turn around and then I'm going to fire you up and then you reverse whatever. And then you take me apart, however you want to take me apart. Yeah. And he finishes off of the top rope. And as he finishes me off on the top rope, and he got me pinned, one, two, three. He gets out. I mean, they're cheering the crazy place. And he crawls out of the ring, and he goes back into the dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
I stumble up to my feet, and I wave my finger. No, 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 no. I body slammed him, and I'm doing my arms in the same manner.
Yeah.
Him. Dude, they popped just as loud for me because I just body slammed. I didn't say I beat him. I just said I was going to body slam him, and I did that. And they popped just as loud for me. And when I got back to the dressing room, he grabbed a hold of me, and he hugged me, and he squeezed me so hard. He goes, Mike, he says, oh, my God, they done everything that you said that they would do.
Yeah, old school 101, man. That sounds like
and that's it.
You could take that anywhere, it applies. I'm serious. Anywhere
and
you go, you, just like, you know, we went to ECW.
I didn't think I ever got hit by a chair while I was there. I just did some old school stuff and sped it up a little bit. Same with Mexico, put some Memphis into some lucha and had fun with it. It always works, man.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It still does to this day. You just, you know, a lot of them are doing it. Seems like some of them are trying to come back to it a little bit. But, you know, it's the fact that there's a thing where nobody listens now. And that's just society in general. The youth don't listen, unfortunately. But right. If you're the youth listeners, I love you. God bless you. But we know what our demographics are, so there might be one or two of you. So anyway, Jimmy.
I got it. Before we end this here today, and thank you again, Mike, for everything, I've got to ask, tell me about working Cactus Jack. I've got to hear about that.
Okay, so the first time that I wrestled Cactus Jack, my mom and dad came to the house or came to the show that night. And whenever I first started wrestling, they told me, they said, if you do that fake stuff, he says, we won't walk across the street, you know, to watch you do that stuff. Mm-hmm. I had them traveling 6 hours in one direction to watch me do this stuff. But she shows up, you know, and she's always been telling me, you know, since I was 12, got into the wrestling, you know, scene. Mm-hmm. And she's telling me how fake it is. Mm-hmm. And so Cactus, me and Cactus ate lunch that afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I'm figuring he's college educated because he spoke really well, you know. So I'm thinking, you know, he's college, you know.
Yeah.
So, but then as soon as they rang the bell, he stepped out of his world and into mine, and he walked out there and he punched me in the side of my head so hard, I almost passed out.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you don't think I will step up with you? And I punched him just as hard as he punched me, hoping that he would pass out. And then it was a fight. And yeah. Now, I mean, we was beating the snot out of each other. Uh-huh. So then halfway through the match, he picks up a metal chair and he hits me like 3 times in the back with that. That's when my mama come down out of the concession stand, and she's her way through the she's on her way down, and I told Cactus Jack, I said, yeah, you've done it now, my mama's coming down here to whoop your ass. Well, Bert and my dad cut her off before she could get down there to whoop old Cactus's ass, you know. I was like, god damn, what are you doing, you know, let her come.
You're killing my gimmick. Come on.
That's a good one.
So after the show's over, you know, I ended up beating Cactus, you know, and mm-hmm. So I go up, and I mean, I am beat to snot, you know, and I'm mm-hmm. just sitting there, and I'm just like, wore down.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom opens the dressing room door, and she looks at me, and I said, what are you doing? She says, I'm just checking on you. Uh-huh. I said, what are you coming down to the wrestling ring? Or, you know, whenever Jack was hitting me with that chair, she said, I was just wanting to check on you. Just make sure you're all right. She says, Michael, you turned white whenever that third time he hit you with that chair. He wasn't toying around with that damn chair, you know, I was just saying.
Yeah.
So anyway, and I told my mom, I said, well, Mom, you've been telling me since I was this tall. I said, this is, you know, it's fake stuff. Mm-hmm. You, out of everybody, should know better than, you know, to believe that, you know. And she said, and she looked at me, and it would give me one of the best compliments in the world. She goes, Michael, you make that shit look too real. And then I was like, oh my God.
So I was like, that one was. Wasn't me.
It wasn't me. It was Cactus Jack that made that shit look real. I was fighting for my life.
Yeah, he was beating the hell out of me, Mom. Yeah. I can't believe you let 2 people hold you back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Them off, Mama.
Yeah. I see how much you love me, Mama.
Have you seen him recently, or have you seen Mick after that?
Whenever he retired, he came to Nashville. And then mm-hmm. he wanted to see me, you know. I know him, you know, and I've seen him in WWE and stuff, but he wanted me to come to his dressing room. So they was wrestling at the fairgrounds, the auditorium at the fairgrounds. And I, we didn't have that show that night. So I opened the back door of the building.
Yeah.
And Cactus opens his dressing room door at the same time, and we both peek our heads out, and we both point. It's just like it was planned out, pointed at each other, and Cactus is saying, "Come here, come here, come here." So I run into the dressing room, and he says, "Oh my God." He says, "Mike, I never got to tell you this." He says, but there was something about me and you. We clicked. There was something about it. He says, it just, you didn't give up, and I didn't, it was just something, He says, why didn't you stay in WWE?
Uh-huh.
And, because, I was chasing Terry Taylor around. He was going back and forth, and ended up, I was in WWE for a little while, and then I was, back in WCW. And
right. At odd times. It was a strange time for,
Yeah, it was.
Like that.
That was actually going to be one of my questions, so you just answered that. That was thank you for doing that, actually, because you read my mind, Mike. Yeah.
Hey, dude, listen here, man. We could probably sit here and, go on for 3-4 hours, man. And I technically like to keep my show within my times. I got to get my times. Hit your times, man.
Okay.
Don't take all your shit in. I love you, man. It's great to hear from you. And,
I love you, too.
I think we should do a part two of this.
Yeah, please.
Oh, yeah. I've got all kinds of other stuff to talk about. Silent Shane Eaton. Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
It's all about him.
that's a part two in itself.
Go ahead and plug it now. You're coming back for a part two. We'll figure out when and everything, but so we'll keep the fans and the listeners on suspense there for the next time of what other great stories you have, man. But it's been a blast, man. I've laughed and laughed.
Absolutely.
It's been a fun hour here. We appreciate you coming on, and I hope everything's going well for you and all that good stuff, man. Jimmy, we're going to take a break, and you're going to come back and ask Wolfie D anything. And then, right?
That's right. We're coming back with Ask Wolfie D Anything, man. I tell you. Never tell what they're going to ask, Mike. It's crazy sometimes.
Yeah, oh, my God. Jimmy, it's been nice talking to you. Wolfie, I love you, brother. And
yes, love you
too, man. You too, Mike. Great. Yeah. Have you done many podcasts before?
No. This is the first, actually, maybe one more.
Yeah.
And I don't remember when it was.
I bet it's going to do really good. I really bet it will.
You're a natural, man. You really are. It's great.
Yeah. Hey, my buddy out there in San Diego, he paints the football helmets for Snoop Dogg. And I used to go out there and do that gig, in the last couple of years. Uh-huh. And so this year I'm not going to go out there, but he's always told me, he says, Mike, I want to buy you a podcast. And he says, and set you all up and everything. He says, yeah. He says, because the people would just listen to you because you got that voice. And I was like, what voice do I have? why do people want to listen to me? I look like Ernest T. Worrell.
Nothing wrong with that, man. Come on now. John Cena looks like him. Yes. Anyway, thank you, Mike. Thank you so much.
And we'll be in touch, dude. And
okay,
I will talk to you again, man. Like I said, great hearing from you. And I had a
absolutely,
fun
time with you, man. All hope right, you're brother. Doing good. Everything all good.
Yeah,
in your
man.
World.
Yeah, I mean it's not perfect, but it ain't great in mine either. So
thanks, man. Mike.
But all right, dude. We'll see you.
Okay. All right.
Take care, buddy. Thank you.
Okay, you got it.
DJ, hit the music. All right, we are back with Ask Wolfie D Anything. And man, I tell you, Colorado kid, Mike Rapata, he's awesome, dude. That was really cool.
Yeah. Don't you love his laugh?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, he's just a cool guy, and he's always, you know, just he's always been around and done some awesome things. And it was really cool to hear his story and get to know him a little better. Because, like I said, I worked on a few shows with him, but mostly it was, you know, kind of doing, you know how it is when you're in the locker room. You're not like, if you're not like riding, if you're not like car ride guys, you sometimes don't get to know everybody as well. So anyway, long story short, Colorado Kid, awesome show. Hope y'all enjoyed that.
Yeah.
We also hope you enjoy these questions we're about to ask here. So the first, don't ask Wolfie.
Yeah. No, I said, don't like Homer.
Like, so it's Ask Homer? Is that what we're doing?
Oh, homie.
All right. Well, this first one is from Facebook listener Joey Cummings. And I think we did try to get a little more of an elaboration on this one, but he asked a question of, I want to hear a Terry Landell story.
Yeah, I remember that was actually, sometimes it's you, sometimes it's me on that site who replied. Yeah. And that was me because... when I moved, the only time I met Terry Landell was, hell, if I met him back in the day, I don't remember it, but I met him in like 2013 when I moved to Maryville, which is around Knoxville, and I mean, that's his area. I think I worked one show for him, and that was enough.
Okay. that was enough?
Yeah, it was a parking lot show, and I don't like parking lot shows anyway, but
yeah.
It seems so generic and but just it just looks bad to me.
Sure.
But at any rate, I know a lot of people didn't like Terry. I've heard a lot of things and some people did. Heard he was pretty shady, and that's really all I know. He like I said, I worked one show, and I came on, and he had a little cable TV show. I did that for him, because when I first moved up there, you'd have thought that, you know, Jesus had arrived the way he was acting with me, you know, like we had known each other for years, and hey, buddy. So,
right.
Yeah, that's all I really know about him, man. I swear, I don't have a story. If there's something that I'm forgetting that this person is hinting at, Brian, right, Brian?
No? Joey
Cummings. I know a Brian Cummings. That's why I said that.
Yeah, it's okay.
But anyway, yeah, if there's something I'm forgotten, please tell me.
Well, you know, yeah, let me ask you a question. So sometimes when somebody is like that, buddy, buddy, hey, buddy, I don't know, it sets off like a red flag for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I'm like standoffish immediately. I'm like, okay, well, you know.
I had already heard story. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't.
That doesn't help.
Yeah. What George South said, we can't work a worker. We've been knowing that for years.
Right. You cannot work a worker. And that's the truth. So, okay, the last name, Landell. What's the story with that? Is that his shoot name, you think? And it's just ironic that Buddy Landell.
I'm pretty sure not his real name. Hell, I don't know. Like I said, right. I don't know a lot about the guy, man, but I do know he was kind of shady. And the one show I did work for him, I worked Tracy. I think I told this before. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But so Tracy's just determined for me and his finish that my son Raiden's mother be included in the finish. And she has never been in the wrestling ring. She's never come to the ring with anybody. She ain't had a lick of experience and really not athletic either. And she could do this. She could do this. And it was just the deal where from the crowd, she's supposed to stand up, come like to the ring and underhand toss me a chain to me in the middle of the ring. down, and I think the ref was down. Well, she goes to throw it, and she throws it over my head and out of the ring.
My God.
So I just did miss a beat. I slid out, grabbed it, slid back in quick as could be. And, you know, it didn't look good, but it really didn't mess up the finish, you know what I'm saying, because I got it so quick.
Yeah.
But Tracy, and he was the one that begged her to do it, and she kept saying, I've never done it. I don't want to. He starts getting on to her. How'd you throw that out of the ring? I said, Tracy, she didn't want to do it, man.
Yeah. So one thing I do know about Tracy is he does like to use a manager, whether it's against him or with him. That's awesome. I love that about Tracy. The other thing is I know he ain't afraid to get on somebody, because I saw him get all over Brewster Fetter one night, and I felt bad because I was supposed to be in that role. But I've told this story a million times. I don't want to tell it again, but I wasn't able to manage Tracy that night. And I'd managed him a couple times before. And unfortunately, I was not able to manage him that night. And Brewster, unfortunately, messed some stuff up. And I felt bad because, you know, I don't want to get into the level of talent, you know, that I had versus whatever. But
right.
I just felt like I knew how to be places that was a little better for the guys. But, you know, Brewster's awesome. No disrespect. So anyway, yeah, that's the Terry Landell story. And it actually turned into a little bit better there with that Tracy story one more time, because I do love that. And I can just see him getting all over her too. And you're like, come on, man.
I'm too aggressive. I mean, I'm up for it, but he just started. Why are you? I'm like, hold on, man. I don't want to make Tracy look like he didn't know.
Right. Right. Like he did to Brewster. But anyway, we'll get off of that. All right. Well, our next one, and this one's a cool one because, you know, we've talked about this kind of a lot, but I like the question. So it's JP at JP Vanilla Gorilla on Twitter. And he says, what was WCW like in 2000? He thinks you guys had potential, especially would have been great on Saturday nights as the heels for the high flying teams. And you kind of were that for a minute, you know. Right. But what was, because, you know, right then it was kind of a weird scene back there. And now, were you there enough to kind of get a feel of what the culture was like in there?
Yeah, I mean, you knew that the, like, I wasn't in the, we just happened to be there type of deal, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you got your top guys and all of them have their drama. My little money didn't make a difference to what was going on, you know.
Sure. Sure.
Money they were losing. I didn't have nothing to do with me. So, I was really in that conversation. I mean, you could tell, like, the older guys, you know. And I'm not going to say, like, I've seen it worse at places, I guess. And right off the top of my head, I don't know a comparison. But, I mean, it just didn't feel that bad to me. Like I said, it's probably because I was having fun. But,
sure.
Yeah, man. I mean, everybody knew something wasn't right, but and then you started before it got closer and closer and closer than you really knew. But I mean, what are you gonna do, right?
Yeah, and I've said it before, and we actually had a 2-part episode where we had Shannon Moore and Big Vito, where we covered your whole time in WCW in depth, even watching matches, and had other guys that were in the matches with us. So I highly recommend going back in the archives there and listening to PG-13 as WCW. But it's part one and part two, by the way, too. So we do cover a lot of this, but just to kind of as a refresher on things, because I know we've got new listeners.
Mm-hmm.
What would you compare the WC? And again, I know it was a different situation, but what would you compare the locker rooms of WCW to working in WWE? What would you compare that to?
Really about the same, man. I mean, it's just they're both big, giant companies, professional stuff. I mean,
yeah,
the boys are the boys no matter where they are. And a lot of the same guys at the time that I was at one place were also at the other, but then some weren't.
Right.
It's a wrestling locker room at a professional level, man. As I said, my role was never big enough in any of those for me to be in that position of any kind of drama, really, you know.
Yeah, right.
And the ones me and Jamie created after hours, but that wasn't my hierarchy, you know.
Yeah. And enough is not said about this either. Basically, as we looked at it and I did my research when we had the guys on, and this was essentially kind of the end for PG-13 in a major role, you know.
Yeah.
You guys did other matches, but after the WCW run, you kind of split up and you go one way and Jamie goes another. And I don't think enough is said about that. You know, even though there's a little bit to say there, it's still kind of epic in a sense, in a way that, you know, I know you say your role was limited. You didn't really, you were just having fun, and I respect all that. But if you think about it in the whole line of things, it's kind of a crazy thing that you ended your career in WCW and essentially as a tag team, you know? So crazy to think about, because, you know, everybody thinks of PG-13 as, and you are a legendary tag team. But what I mean by that is it's just like, wow, you know, the run in WCW was the last one. Major
pretty much.
Damn, man. Anyway, I'm beating a dead horse, but I just, there's something there that I'm not.
But I reinvented myself by God.
You did. You did. It wasn't the end for you. I just mean for the tag team, you know.
Yeah, no, it's me. I just had to throw that.
Of course, the reinvention. We love it. So, okay. All right. Thank you, JP. Always appreciate it, man. Great listener on Twitter. So our next listener is Ben Martin, my own homie from, he's from my neck of the woods. Ben's part of the intelligentsia of the Jimmy Street world. But anyway, yeah. So he's Ben Martin on Facebook.
He's your narc. Is that what you're saying?
He's not my narc.
He's your stooge. He's your snitch.
No, he's not. He knows everything, man. I'm, he's just like, messing. No, but seriously, he is that way in a sense because he knows all these stories. It's impressive the stuff he comes up with. Cool. I got to give him a major shout out. But anyway, so this is an interesting question because the Headbangers talked about it a little bit. And we did talk about it a little bit when we were talking about your career too. You didn't go into it that much, but did tensions between Ricky and Tracy spill over into Memphis while they were there?
Yeah.
For the Smoky Mountain feud. So basically, you know the deal. There was an issue with their women in the bar in Kingsport, Tennessee, and it turns into a big deal where Ricky ends up leaving or getting fired or whatever from Smoky Mountain.
I think it was more of a, from what I recall, it was a more of them two, like, if he's going to be there, I ain't going to be there. You know, you may take your pick type of deal, I recall.
Okay. So there were times where they were both there, right?
Fuck it too. Ricky probably said fuck it, but at the same time, I think it was I remember it having something to do with, look, if he's going to be there, I ain't going to be there type deal.
Okay. So they were kind of drawing a line, essentially. So. Yeah. So while they were both in Memphis, though, after that, how were things, you know?
I remembered being just so disappointed that Ricky couldn't be there because it was like fucking up the angle, you know, the same way we endured some shit right there, like two pivotal points, like with Doug and Tommy and then Eddie passing away and Doug had to leave right when we were kicking things off.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we had to improvise there. Doug came back. It all worked in the end. And of course, as we talked about, did a phenomenal job filling in.
Yeah.
And then it was like deja vu. All of a sudden, Ricky can't be there. As soon as we just beat him and shit in that Louisville Gardens match. You know, big deal coming up. And now Ricky can't be here. It's like, son of a bitch, man.
Yeah. You know?
Man, it sucked that it had to go down that way. But whatever.
It does, man. And it was always weird to see Robert by himself, even in, you know, WCW.
Or when tagging with Buddy or
whatever
the case may be.
And great tag team. They're awesome, talented individuals, but it wasn't the Rock and Roll Express, you know.
No, Buddy Landell is a singles wrestler, you know.
He is a very good one, you know. So, but anyway, I was just curious. So, Watch the hair, brother. So, did Tracy or Ricky ever say anything to you about, like, that guy's no good or whatever? Did they ever?
You know, I'm sure, because I would have to, it would have to have been, you know, back then, sitting at home on your landline. We talked on the phone a lot. I didn't talk to Ricky on the phone a lot back then, but I talked to Tracy a lot. I'm sure something was said, but I don't remember specifics on it.
Yeah. I mean, did they ever in a...
But it's maybe not like I took sides on it or anything. I don't remember doing that. Just the boys being the boys and the wrestling business as it was being the wrestling business. That's all.
Yeah, and on a much smaller level, I've been in a very similar situation before several times, and I've had to where it was like I felt like I should pick sides, but at the same time, I felt like in my, you know, whereas a lot of guys thought, okay, you should go with this guy because you've been tight with him, but I actually stayed with the company that he was disliking, and anybody that knows my story knows what I'm talking about, but the long story short of that is I stayed with the company because I was in a good spot, and they were going to do things for me. So I think anyone that would ask you to quit a company for them is ridiculous because, and I know that's not this situation, but what I mean is you were tight with Tracy and you had a great run with Ricky. So I can see where there would be some, you know, walking a fine line there. But anyway, yeah, I think that pretty much answers it. But I just, yeah. I'm always, you know, these little things that are kind of, you know, it's kind of like the little bitty stuff underneath, like what is there anything else we need to know about this sometimes? And I'm, yeah. I get in that sense too, where it's like, was there one detail that we didn't know about? And it's, you know, I think that's why we ask questions, right? So.
Sure.
Yeah. To find answers. So thank you, Ben Martin. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Joey Cummings, for all the great questions today on Ask Wolfie D Anything. So that's it, brother. That's all I got.
Word. Thanks, guys, once again for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling, the podcast that's based on the old school but can still help you find the good stuff from today. Jimmy Street and the plastic chic Jared are the undisputed tag team champions of the wrestling podcast world. From thought-provoking topics to superstar interviews to action figure expertise, this team does it all. And all they ask is, give me back my pro wrestling. Every other Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's right. It's the talk of Middle Tennessee, the channel you love to hate and the channel you hate to love. It's Brian Turner from Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. And if you're looking for matches from Wolfie D to Jerry Lawler to Dusty Rhodes and the team that put a pimp before your eyes and a goatee between your thighs, Boudica and Athena, go to LostWrestling.com. See, I made it easy for you. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Booyah.
Join me, Gene Jackson, for the Jackson Interaction Podcast, where I'll be doing one-on-one interviews with people from the world of professional wrestling, as well as stand-up comedy. You can get them anywhere podcasts are available in both video and audio form, but you can find them all at GeneJacksonPod.com.
Hey everyone, this is Shane from Insane Shane's World. I release wrestling figures of enhancement talent, mid-card wrestlers, and wrestlers that you never thought would have a figure available. So if you are interested in adding a really cool and rare figure to your collection, then don't hesitate to contact me at shamtheman73@gmail.com. That's shamtheman73@gmail.com. You can also join my Facebook group. Just search Insane Shane's World.
This is the Big Picture, Michael Jablonski. Don't forget to tune in every week to Jablonski's Pissed Off on the Mike Jablonski's Pissed Off YouTube channel.
The hot frog in the sport. He's gonna tell you all about it. He doesn't care what you think. You're gonna hear all about it. Mike Jablonski.
It's the Pissed Off.
Mike Jablonski.
It's the Pissed Off.
Mike Jablonski.
It's the Pissed Off.
So that was another great episode. Hey, Wolfie, tell them where they can find you on social media.
Jimmy, they can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. I'm just kidding. They can find me on Facebook. My personal page is Warren Wolf, WLFE. I'm on Instagram at WarrenWolf13.
You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at LiveWolfieD. Here's the thing. Wolfie always has offers for his autographed photos. He has a selection of some awesome photos from throughout his career that he will autograph and personalize any way that you want him to. Just contact him either directly at his personal Facebook page or through any one of our other pages, and we'll make sure you get in contact directly with Wolfie. Get those photos, right, Wolfie?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff on there, you know, to help with the podcast.
Folks, if you can't get out to a show to meet Wolfie D, there's nothing like that, especially for the fans of PG-13 and Wolfie D. And before we go, you can always find me, your host, Jimmy Street, at James Rock Street on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And hey, Jimmy, before we go real quick, I just want to add in there, from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate, first of all, the work you've done for this podcast. You have worked your butt off.
secondly, the people that are liking the page. Beyond that, even more, is the people that are listening, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and remember, guys, the podcast drops a new episode every Monday at noon, and our past episodes are streaming now on demand on all major podcast formats. Thanks again.
I got a cap for you, don't.
He got a cap for you, don't.
I got a cap for you, don't.
He got a cap for you, don't.
He got a cap for you, don't. And here we go. The original white boy that came out sagging, not bragging, don't be hating, cause I'm spitting the truth. Still living in color. Bum rush your mother. Utilize a hubcap. I'm like any other. Back in the day, I was N-O-D, and I was P to the G, plus the 1 and the 3. In case you forgot, they call me Wolfie D. Been cloned and copied so many times. Tired of suckers taking credit for what is mine. You know who you are, without me name dropping. Wrestling's first white boy coming out hip-hopping. Been doing it like this since 92. Laid low for a while and you thought I was through. Listen real close to these rhymes that I've injected. This shit's so sick it makes your ears get infected. Mad skills, no faking, there is no one great. Cause I'm bringing more folks than Obi-Wan or Vader. Not here to play games, so you better beware. You don't like me, so what?
I really don't care.
All the time I keep ticking and I can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. When I finish, I'll straight knock you out. Please allow me to tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna wind it up, then I'm driving it home. It's Wolfie D, baby. Huh? I got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome.
This has been a James Rock Street production.